Hello, I'm Michael Steed from FTC Kaplan, and this webcast is about the New Companies Act 2006. The New Companies Act 2006 is the longest piece of legislation ever to be passed in the UK, at around about 1,500 sections. It's a mammoth piece of law which had a mammoth gestation period, having taken 8 years from original consultation to royal assent in November 2006. So what's its significance for AAT members? Well, that's simple. Anyone either running or advising a company, in particular a small company, will be affected by these provisions. But don't panic. Although the Act received royal assent in November 2006, it's so big and far-reaching that the government intends to switch it on in bits, with some parts having the force of law from 2006 and some coming into effect at the latest by October 2008. As AAT members, we need to understand what the Act is trying to do. As far as small companies are concerned, and many AAT members will be running or advising such companies, its effect is largely deregulatory. That is, the administrative burden on small businesses is expected to be reduced. The main thrust of the Companies Act 2006 is think small first. The earlier Companies Acts had large companies as their main focus, and small companies were dealt with by exception. But the hard facts are that nearly all the companies in the UK are small concerns, many with two or even one shareholder, so dealing with them by exception simply runs against the grain of reality. So the new Act deals first with small companies, then bolts on the provisions for public and quoted companies afterwards. In effect, it turns the old legislation on its head. Apart from the 30 think small first provision, there are two other strands that run through the new Act. The first of these is enlightened shareholder value. Put simply, this means that the directors of a company need to think not just about delivering profits to shareholders, but also to think about the effect that their decisions have on customers, suppliers, employees, the public and the environment. These are the stakeholders of the business whose lives and well-being are influenced by the decision of the directors. So their decisions need to be taken within a wider context. Think of as an example about the constant complaints from supermarket suppliers about the way that they have been treated by the supermarkets. The other strand is the embracing of new technology, and that means more jobs online and less paper floating around. This strand includes the provision that companies can dispense with the need for paper share certificates. How many small companies do you know that actually issue them in the first place? Another benefit of the new technology approach is that advisors will be able to incorporate companies over the web rather than as they do now for occasional incorporation by supplying completed forms to Companies House. Like online VAT registration application, this is faster than paper, and the real-time correction and checks are likely to go down well. However, this new approach does need to address issues such as how to deal with a statutory declaration that a director needs to sign using the Form 12. This currently needs to be signed in front of a solicitor, commissioner for oaths, or a justice of the peace. And it remains to be seen how this will be dealt with in the months running up to October 2008. Let's now deal with some of the specific issues that are within the new Act. These include the abolition of authorised share capital. Instead, the incorporation, over the web, will contain a statement of initial capital and shareholdings, the information that's currently in the Memorandum of Association. Private companies will no longer need to appoint a company secretary. This, especially for single-member companies, has long been considered a pain, and its passing is unlikely to be mourned. However, if a company wishes to keep a company secretary, then that is fine. His or her powers will be exactly as they are at the moment. Under the new Act, the AGM will be an opt-in rather than as it is at the moment, an opt-out. How many small family companies do you know that actually have an AGM? Most of them, if they happen at all, happen over the breakfast table. The new Act will also provide separate model articles for small companies. These will be clearer and shorter than the current range of offerings within the old Companies Act. Tables A, which is the standard set of articles for small companies, is rarely invoked in practice. Indeed, Companies House do not even require its inclusion in the application pack for a new company unless they've been modified, as perhaps they would be for a single member company. And the last immediate specific issue is that the filing deadline is going to be reduced from 10 months to 9 months. Remind yourself that the UK has currently one of the longest periods between accounting period and submission of information for both statutory information and tax, but this change is unlikely to be popular. So in view of the above changes, what will the constitution for a small company look like? The memorandum will be greatly reduced. It will contain only very limited information: the name of the subscribers, the fact that they wish to form a company, and that they will take at least one share each. The objects clause will also effectively disappear, as the Companies Act makes a default position that its objects will be unrestricted. Existing companies with restricted objects may wish to change them by giving notice to the registrar. As far as shares are concerned, from October 2008, companies will not be required to specify their authorised share capital. Instead, they will advise the initial statement of capital to the registrar. Shares will still have a nominal value. But what does change is that under the new Act, directors will be able to allot shares without the members' permission, subject to certain restrictions, such as there only being one class of share. Some measures in the Companies Act 2006 are relevant for all companies regardless of size. The audit process, for example, has come under scrutiny. There's a new provision for the disclosure of audit contracts. Companies will be forced to disclose the terms on which they engage their auditors. Audit reports will need to be signed by a named individual, although this rule will be relaxed where there is a risk of intimidation and violence. A new offence will be introduced of knowingly or recklessly causing an audit report to be misleading, false, or deceptive. And auditors will be able to limit their liability as auditors, providing that the provisions are fair and reasonable. Directors' duties have also been addressed in the new Act. Up to now, directors' duties have been made through common law, that is, case law, and the new Act properly codifies all these duties. In addition, it requires that directors look at the wider picture, in the words of the Act, to promote the success of the company for the benefit of its members as a whole. And this, of course, is the principle of enlightened shareholder value that we talked about a few moments ago. This principle is actually quite radical, and there will no doubt be some anxiety about this point. But directors will, however, only be liable to the company as they are now, and not to its shareholders. So, to conclude, what do we need to do now? Well, the most immediate requirement is to make sure that our companies and client companies have complied with the new UK law that implements the EC Company Law Directive and which came into effect on the 1st of January 2007. These provisions are within the Companies Act 2006. And the practical upshot of this is to ensure that the company's name and number and its registered office will be on all its soft and hard correspondence, and that includes letters, emails, order forms, and interestingly too, the company's website. And that is the end of my webcast on the Companies Act 2006.